Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So today we're reading 5th canto and chapter 22. We just started chapter 22. It's called The Orbits of the Planets. And we're going to start text 1. We do recitation? I'll just read the English then, shall I? Okay. So text 1. Sanskrit sounds very complicated, so I'll just go to the translation. So we're going to read text 1. So it's mentioned, King Parikshit inquired from Sukadev Goswami, "My dear Lord, you have already affirmed the truth that the supremely powerful sun god travels around Dhruvaloka with both Dhruvaloka and Mount Sumeru on his right. Yet at the same time, the sun god faces the signs of the zodiac and keeps Sumeru and Dhruvaloka on his left. How can we reasonably accept that the sun god proceeds with Sumeru and Dhruvaloka on both of his left and right simultaneously?" There is no purport, so do I continue? Yeah? Okay, so text 2. Sri Sukadev Goswami clearly answered, "When a potter's wheel is moving and the small ants located in that big wheel are moving with it, no one can see that their motion is different from that of the wheel because they appear sometimes on one part of the wheel and sometimes on another. Similarly, the signs and constellations with Sumeru and Dhruvaloka on their right move with the wheel of time, and the ant-like sun and other planets move with them. The sun and planets, however, are seen in different signs and constellations at different times. This indicates that their motion is different from that of the zodiac and the wheel of time itself." So we'll read text number 3 because there's no purport. "The original cause of the cosmic manifestation is Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. When great saintly persons, fully aware of the Vedic knowledge, offered prayers to the Supreme Person, he descended to the material world in the form of the sun to benefit all the planets and purify fructive activities. He divided himself into 12 parts and created seasonal forms, beginning with spring. In this way, he created the seasonal qualities such as heat, cold, and so on." Do I continue till purport, right? Okay, we're going to be here all day. Text number 4. "According to the system of 4 varnas and 4 ashrams, people generally worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is situated as the sun god. With great faith, they worship the Supreme Personality as the super soul, according to the ritualistic ceremonies handed down in the 3 Vedas, such as Agnihotra and similar higher and lower fructive acts, and according to the process of mystic yoga. In this way, they very easily attain the ultimate goal of life." Text number 5. "The sun god, who is Narayan or Vishnu, the soul of the worlds, is situated in outer space because the upper and lower portion, between the upper and lower portions of the universe. Passing through the 12 months on the wheel of time, the sun goes in touch with 12 different signs of the zodiac and assumes 12 different names according to those signs. The aggregate of those 12 months is called Samvatsara, or the entire year. According to the lunar calculations, 2 fortnights, one of the waxing moon and the other of the waning, form 1 month. The same period is 1 day and night for the planet Pritiloka. According to stellar calculations, a month equals 2 1/4 constellations. When the sun travels for 2 months, a season passes, and therefore the seasonal changes are considered parts of the body of the year. Text 6. Thus, the time the sun takes to rotate through half the outer space is called ayana, and its period of movement in the north or in the south. Okay, we're making progress. Text number 7. It's got purple here. Okay, text 7. The sun god has 3 speeds: slow, fast, and moderate. The time he takes to travel entirely around the spheres of heaven, earth, and space at these 3 speeds is referred to by learned scholars by the 5 names: Samvatsara, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara, and Vatsara. So now we're going to read the purple. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Okay, so according to the solar astronomical calculations, each year extends 6 days beyond the calendar year. And according to the lunar calculation, each year is 6 days shorter. Therefore, because of the movement of the sun and moon, there's a difference of 12 days between the solar and lunar years. As a Samvatsar, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara, and Vatsara pass by, 2 extra months are added within each 5 years. This makes a 6 Samvatsara. But because that Samvatsara is extra, the solar system is calculated according to the above 5 names. Did that make any sense to you at all? Okay. So we're just going to quickly chant the praise. Om Jnana Tirmandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pasatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So we'll read the translation one more time. The sun god has 3 speeds: slow, fast, and moderate. The time he takes to travel entirely around the spheres of heaven, earth, and space at these 3 speeds is referred to by learned scholars by the 5 names: Samvatsara, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara, and Vatsara. Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So first of all, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas here, so I can speak something. Ananta Prabhu asked me to speak on Bhagavatam, and out of all the chapters he could give me, or canto, it had to be canto 5, you know. But I'm praying that through the mercy of the devotees, I can say something that might be useful. So this is, as you can see, it's an interesting purport, and of course the whole entire section of this Bhagavatam, Canto 5, is called the creative impetus, and this is where we learn about the whole concept of creation, how creations happen and different calculations, and of course we know that in Mayapur they're building a new temple, a Vedic planetarium, and it primarily is based on this section of Bhagavatam. So I was thinking, before we move on to and discuss today's verse and purport, it'd be nice to just get up to speed up to what's happening so far. At least for me, when I attend Bhagavatam class, we do verse by verse, but sometimes I lose the plot. What's the story all about? So I thought maybe we could summarize the whole 5th canto. And they say Bhagavatam is done in a form of discussion. We see that all Vedic scriptures is done in a form of question, answer, and discussion. So Bhagavad Gita is a discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. And of course, Bhagavatam is a discussion between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadev Goswami. So I thought what we could do is we'll make it very interactive, and I'll be seeing how attentive you've been paying attention to previous Bhagavatam classes. So what we'll do is we'll start with Canto 5, of course, and I'm going to give you a brief summary up to the point where we are in today's chapter and verse. So Canto 5, what is it called? Yes, the creative impetus. So Canto 5 describes the teachings of specifically two great personalities. You got Rushabdev, and then we got Bharat Maharaj. Okay? And in this canto, we're reminded of the temporary nature of this world and the threat of gliding us down to the hellish existence. But it's mentioned that one who takes advantage of hearing Bhagavatam can reap all benefits and return back to the spiritual world. Okay? So Canto 5 begins by describing the descendants of the first Manu. So now I want to actually explain. This is really interesting. Does everyone know Manvantaras? What is the job or a role of Manvantaras? What does Manvantaras do? There are different avatars of the Lord, but what's the specific role of Manvantaras? Procreation? What was that? Okay, kind of. What do Manvantaras do? What's the purpose of Krishna coming down as one of the Manvantaras? And what does he do? What's the purpose? Okay, so actually Manvantaras, they're in charge of the universe for a fixed period of time during each day of Brahma, right? So Brahma is actually the creation, but it's actually the Manvantaras who deals with the nitty-gritty details of the universal affairs. Now, in one day of Brahma, how many Manvantaras are there? 14 Manvantaras. Okay, good. Now, this is very interesting. So Bhagavatam is very interesting because what it does is it actually describes every single Manvantara. So from Cantos 3 to 9 describes the activities of all 9 Manvantaras. Okay? Who's the first Manvantara? Swayambhuva Manu. So it's mentioned that from Canto 3 to Canto 7, we hear the description and activities of Swayambhuva Manu and his descendants. Then from Canto 8 and 9, we hear about the description of the other 13 Manus. Okay? So I just want to quickly summarize this as well, that Swayambhuva Manu was married to who? What was the name of the wife of Swayambhuva Manu? He was married to a personality called Satyarupa. Okay? And how many kids or children did Swayambhuva Manu have? No? You can take a wild guess. It can be all day. So actually, Swayambhuva Manu had 5 children. He had 3 daughters and 2 sons. Okay? So the daughter's name is Devahuti, which we hear about in... which canto do we hear about Devahuti? 3rd canto. And Devahuti is the mother of who? Kapilamuni. Okay? Then we hear about Akuti, who married Ruchi, which is also in the 4th canto. Then we hear about Prasuti, she's another daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, and she got married to which another great personality? Their daughter was Sati. Who's the father of Sati? It's a very famous pastime that we will hear in the 6th canto. Daksha, yeah. So Prasuti married Daksha. And then finally, in the 4th canto, we hear about the activities of Uttanapad. Right? Who's the famous personality that comes in the lineage of Uttanapad? In Canto 4. What's the famous pastime that we always quote? It's about a little kid, 5 years old. Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj was the son of Uttanapad. So this is all description of Swayambhuva Manu's activities. And this is just a side point. Who's the current Manu right now, at present? Does anyone know? And through that, Krishna descends. It begins with V. Who's the current Manu today in our Vivisvata, exactly. Okay? So that's what it is. So now, Canto 5, so we've already spoken about Uttanapada and his activities. Canto 5 starts with who? Who's the brother of Uttanapada? Swayambhu Manu had two sons. Uttanapada was one of them, and then the next great personality we'll hear, which is actually the introduction of Canto 5. Priyavrata. Yeah, Priyavrata Maharaj is another personality. So what happens is that beginning of first six chapters of Canto 5, we hear the activities of Priyavrata Maharaj. Now, Priyavrata Maharaj was actually instructed by Narad Muni, and Narad Muni explained to Priyavrata Maharaj about the nature of material world. And from very beginning, Priyavrata Maharaj wanted to renounce everything. But what happened was that when Uttanapada and Dhruva Maharaj, all their lineage, became extinct, there was a need in society to take over the rulership of the world. And therefore, Swayambhu Manu went to Priyavrata Maharaj saying that, now can you please leave your renunciation and you take over the kingdom and rule over the entire world. Priyavrata Maharaj was hesitant because he knew that once you get entangled in the material world, it's all over. So what happens is, Swayambhu Manu then invites to convince Priyavrata Maharaj by one particular personality. Does anyone know who that was? Brahma. Brahma then comes down and he convinces Priyavrata Maharaj that, please, can you take over the rulership of the whole world, and that's also part of Varnashram duty. And then Priyavrata Maharaj finally gets convinced, and then he takes on a role as a householder. He marries a personality called Bahismati, and they together begot 10 sons. And from that 10 sons, do you know who was the eldest son? Who was the eldest son that took over the throne after Priyavrata Maharaj? So Priyavrata Maharaj is ruling the world. He gets married. He gets 10 kids. He does all his responsibility. Now he passes on the throne to his eldest son. Who's the eldest son of Priyavrata Maharaj? It's actually a personality called Agnidhar. Yeah? Agnidhar. He's the personality then takes over. Agnidhar again, similarly, looks after the kingdom very well, very nicely. He performs religious duties and everything. And then he then also has a son who then takes over the kingdom. Who's the son of Agnidhar? Nabi, exactly. Right? And then from Nabi, then we have the great personality Rishabdev. So this is the connection. Right, so from Swayambhu Manu, you have Priyavrata Maharaj. From Priyavrata Maharaj, you have Agnidhar. From Agnidhar, there's Nabi. And from Nabi comes Rishabdev. Okay, so now Rishabdev's personality we hear. The characteristic of Rishabdev is just amazing. He sets exemplary behavior, and he teaches how to live life in the material world and also achieve spiritual perfection as well. You know? Rishabdev's teaching is amazing. He talks about the importance of human life. He talks about cutting the illusory energy in this material world, which is the very reason we are bound in this world. You know, so he gives loads of instructions. And then one specific thing he talks about is the nature of the mind. You know, we hear a lot about the mind. The mind is the thing that entangles us. But at the same time, it's the same thing that can also create or cause our liberation. And then, so this is what Rishabdev does. Rishabdev then decides to retire, and then he passes on the entire world. Jai Shishi Panchatattva Ki. So Rishabdev then passes on the kingdom to who? His son. Who's his famous son? Bharat Maharaj. So then we hear from chapter 7 to 15, in the fifth canto, we hear the description of three lives of Bharat Maharaj. So from the emperor, he becomes who? He becomes a deer because he becomes attached. After he becomes a deer, who does he become? Jadabharat. Jadabharat then, there's a whole discussion between Jadabharat and a famous king. Who's the famous king? They discuss the whole Krishna consciousness philosophy specifically about the mind. It's called King Rahuguna. Yeah? So Jadabharat instructs King Rahuguna about specifically how the mind causes entanglement and liberation of the jiva. So he goes that the mind can be conquered. So he gives systematic process of how we can conquer the mind. And he mentions that one way you can conquer the mind is through the service of the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, i.e. devotional service, like that. And then, so this is a whole beautiful discussion in these chapters from chapter 7 to 15. At the end of chapter 15, Sukadev also describes the dynasty of Bharat Maharaj, and he also includes King Gaya. Now we get into the technical aspect of Bhagavatam, the fifth canto. So now Parikshit Maharaj wants to hear the astronomical aspect of the creation. So from chapter 16 to 19, we hear the prayers of the residents of Jambadvip, and then now Sukadev Goswami describes the geography of Bhumandala, and we also hear the descendants. We also hear how the Ganges also came about. You know, and therefore, this is how we hear about the creation, astronomical creation of the material universe. After that, now we come into this section. What we've read today is we're going to hear about the planetary system of the entire universe. So now Sukadev Goswami in chapters 20 to 26, he describes the seven oceans, seven islands that surround it, and Lord Brahma's lotus flower. He talks about the sun's movement, planetary orbits, and different planetary systems as well. So, you know, one of the things is, so Prabhu, can we get this connected? Is that okay? 1 second. So we can just start with this and then I can tell you. So, you know, how many of you, when you read Bhagavatam, do you get doubts because you can't understand things? Do we ever get doubts when you read Bhagavatam? Especially the technical aspect, like the fifth canto. I mean, when you read this, the interesting thing is sometimes when you read the Vedic aspect of creation, sometimes it even contradicts the modern science research as well. Like in science, we hear that the sun is actually static, center of the universe. But according to Bhagavatam, we hear the sun is constantly moving also. You know? So it's interesting that when we read Bhagavatam, it is very difficult for us to comprehend and understand things. And so how do we resolve this? So first thing we have to understand is reading and understanding spiritual knowledge, we cannot just depend on our material abilities, our material logic and reasoning. Because our material understanding or our intelligence is very limited. We're trying to comprehend something that's beyond our perception. So what I wanted to do is I want to actually show you three models that I kind of extracted whilst reading Bhagavatam. And these models help us understand how we can understand Krishna better, how we can connect with Krishna better, and the technique in how we can do it. So these are the three models that I find very useful understanding Krishna conscious philosophy. Okay, so if we go to the next slide. So this is a very interesting, we can expand it probably if you press F5 or you can just... Okay, next slide. And yeah, you can just go for it. Just click next until we get the whole thing. Okay, good. And one more time. Okay, can everyone see this? Yeah? So this is a model that Prabhupada writes in the purport of the first canto and the very last verse towards the end of third chapter. Okay? So here... What Prabhupada is explaining is that we're trying to see and understand Krishna, but it's difficult, right? But Prabhupada writes, and he gives a formula, that if you want to see and understand Krishna, he goes, we have to hear with rapt attention. Okay? So hearing, so these models, one thing I want to emphasize is the importance and the power of the hearing process. Okay? So Prabhupada writes that when we hear, not just hear, but what does he say? With rapt attention. You know, because when we just hear, we can hear from one ear and it can come out the other ear. With rapt attention means that you're hearing, you're contemplating, and then it actually goes into the heart and you can actually practically apply it. So Prabhupada writes that we have to hear with rapt attention about Krishna. But sometimes that's very difficult to do. But he says that you can only hear with rapt attention when we're pure in mind. Okay? Only when the mind is pure can we hear the transcendental pastimes of Krishna very nicely. Now the question arises, how can we get a pure mind? So Prabhupada writes that we have to be pure in our action. Okay? So every single thing we do, our activities, you know, the way we interact with people, we associate with people, the way we make choices, every single thing we do actually affects the state of our mind and our consciousness. Okay? And the only way we can do that is if we're pure in lifestyle. So the great thing about Krishna consciousness is it doesn't just talk about high philosophy. It is actually very practical, and it gives us techniques on how we can not only understand the philosophy but also apply it. So if we go to the next slide, Sachinanda Maharaj actually gives a really wonderful example and presentation of something called the tree of life. He says that we should actually live our life according to the tree of life. And this is also technique given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He talks about that there's three things that every living entity should be doing. One of them is called Nama Ruchi. The other one is called Vaishnava Seva. And last but not least is called Jiva Doya. And this is all based on the principle of Tree of Life. So Tree of Life is very, very amazing model to live this particular lifestyle. And it consists of three sections. You have the roots, you have the trunk, and then you have the crown. So the roots, what happens is that if you want to live a very happy lifestyle, you have to take care of many aspects of ourselves. The first aspect we should look after is our spiritual self. This is called the roots. So the root is our relationship with Krishna. And this is what we have to really emphasize on. Are we taking care of our spiritual roots by hearing, chanting, associating, etc.? The second thing is a trunk. The trunk looks after our physical and emotional well-being. You know, so this is our lifestyle, the way we eat, exercise, diet, association. All of these things affect our physical and emotional well-being. So when our roots is taken care of, when our physical needs are taken care of and our emotional needs are taken care of, now we're ready to give to others. And this is where we have the crown of giving back. This is our contribution to society. If we're not strong ourselves, it's difficult to give to others or help others, right? And that's why on a plane, when you go on a plane and they give you this safety instructions and the mask comes down, you know, in an emergency, the mask, oxygen mask comes down. What do they say first thing you should do? You should put it on yourself first before you put it on others. So this is exactly something similar. So when we live a lifestyle of this tree of life and take care of all of our needs, then we can be pure in action, which means we can be pure in mind, which means we can hear with rapt attention, and then therefore we can see and understand Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is Prabhupada's formula in the third chapter. So this is one formula for understanding Krishna. I want to show you another model. Okay? So this is another model. Just Prabhu, you can just get all the information there. Just keep on clicking it. So here, this is a very powerful model, and this is something that we hear in Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter. These are the five verses that summarize practically a whole Krishna consciousness philosophy. But one more, there's a few more? And one more. Okay, good. So, it's quite a lot of information, but I want you to focus on six steps. Okay? So again, we're talking about how can we see Krishna, and how can we understand Krishna and the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So it's mentioned that we have to hear. So here is another formula of how we can hear. And it's mentioned that the hearing process begins by serving pure devotees. Okay? It's mentioned that when we serve pure devotees, we get the affinity to hear. Just by serving great Vaishnavas, that your intention or your affinity to hearing about Krishna increases. And because you have this affinity, you have this eagerness to hear, you will start regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay? So this is, as I said, it's amazing Bhagavatam. This is all extracted from the Bhagavatam, second chapter, the first canto. So just by hearing, serving pure devotees, you get the affinity to hear, and you'll start attending Bhagavatam class on a regular basis. Now, who's a great example in Bhagavatam that actually did this. Narad Muni. We hear that. Narad Muni served great Vaishnavas. He was a son of a maidservant. And just by eating their remnants, he got such an exalted birth as Narad Muni. So when you serve pure devotees, what happens is that our material desires gets cleansed. Okay? So it's mentioned that material desires are very troublesome. And just by serving pure devotees, the process of anatta nivritti begins. We have all these anattas or unwanted qualities that's clouding our pure consciousness. But by serving the great Vaishnavas, the cleansing process has begun. Okay, that's the second step. Now when we do this, when the cleaning happens, the next step of after anatta nivritti, according to Madhira Kadambini, is what? Nishta. So then one becomes fixed up in devotional service. When we get to the stage of nishta, what happens is that we become free from ignorance and passion. These are the three modes that entangle us in this material world. And because we get rid of passion and ignorance, we become established in pure goodness. And only when you come to the platform of pure goodness will you be able to start relishing spiritual ecstasy. And you can actually be happy. When we're in a mode of goodness, our lifestyle is a mode of goodness, you actually experience real happiness. And when you come to mode of goodness is a springboard that gets you up to pure goodness. That's the goal. Okay? And when you come to the pure goodness stage, then the scientific knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed. Okay? So when we try to hear all this, at the moment we won't be able to understand it because we may still be under the modes of passion and ignorance. But only when we raise to the platform of pure goodness can all this technical stuff gets revealed to us. And you gotta understand that as spirit souls, we are pure, we're Satchitananda, and we're full of knowledge. So when we get to pure goodness, that knowledge automatically gets revealed from within. Okay? So once you come to pure goodness, then it says the knots in the heart gets broken. What is this knot that the Bhagavatam is referring to? False ego, ankar. Ankar, or this knot, is what entangles the pure soul in the material world. But through this process, you're untying this knot, all your doubts gets cleared, and you become free from karmic entanglement. So then karma does not affect you. And after the knot is entangled, now you can see the master everywhere and engage in his loving service. So this is another model that was very, very interesting and powerful. I've got one more model to show you. Can I do that? Is that okay? Yeah, it's too much information, but at least if you have this model, you can contemplate on it afterwards. Now this is model 3. I got this from, there's one class I heard by Prabhupada. He was speaking about Bhagavad Gita verse 2.13, about how we're not this body and the body changes, but the soul never changes. And many times when you try to understand spiritual knowledge, we do it with our material consciousness. And when you do that, you won't be able to understand it. Right? So here, Prabhupada was actually explaining that root cause of all suffering in the material world is actually avidya, which is what? Ignorance. And because we're ignorant, what we're ignorant of? We're ignorant of our real need. We're in this world and we're seeking for something, okay? But we don't know what that something is, but we know we need it. You know, it's like a child is suffering because he's hungry, but he doesn't know that food will satisfy the hunger, so therefore the mother's there. So similarly, the living entities in the material world is ignorant of what his real need is. And the need of the living entity is ananta. Does anyone know what ananta mean? Ananta actually means unending happiness. Happiness that never actually dies down. Okay, so that's what the living entities are looking for. So we're looking for happiness, but not any happiness. We're looking for happiness that never, ever ends. So that's why the living entities in the material world are looking for happiness in different things, through the body, through the mind. You know, they experience certain happiness, but then the happiness stops, and it ends up in frustration. So to understand how we can get unending happiness, first thing we have to understand is, what is our identity? Are we this material body or are we the spirit soul? Okay? And what we identify ourselves with depends on our state of consciousness. So we have two levels of consciousness. You have the material consciousness and you have the spiritual consciousness. And this is so systematically explained by Prabhupada, it's quite amazing. So Prabhupada said, when we have material consciousness, this is where the problem arises. That we have narrow vision. What does that mean? With material consciousness, we have narrow vision because we think that happiness can be derived from the physical or mental platform. So your vision's narrowed because our happiness goes beyond that. Because of this, our pleasure or happiness is limited. And because of that, your mind becomes very disturbed. When the mind is disturbed, we tend to get into illusion. And because of this, we end up frustrated or dissatisfied in life. Okay? But when you have spiritual consciousness, your vision is broadened. You know that not only am I a physical being, not only am I have a mental aspect of my identity, but there is something beyond that, which is a spiritual aspect. And only through the spiritual aspect can I actually receive this ananta or unending happiness. So we have broader vision, you have access to real pleasure, real happiness, which is from within. Your mind is peaceful, you're in tune with reality, which means that even though we live in the material world, we still face the three miseries. But when you're connected with Krishna and you have access to this pure happiness, you are not disturbed by the dualities of this material world. And that's the reason why you can be satisfied and happy in every aspect of your life. Like that. So when we understand these models from Bhagavatam and by hearing Bhagavatam classes from other pure devotees, then we can start slowly understanding the technical aspect of Bhagavatam and spiritual life. You know, so whenever I come across something very technical in Bhagavatam and I don't understand it, I tell myself that at the moment I'm in the stage where I don't have the ability to understand this, but as I study more, my understanding will increase and then this concept will also become understandable to me as well. Like that. So anyways, this is just a few things I wanted to share with the devotees here. I'm very happy to be here in Slovenia. It was always a great pleasure. One devotee yesterday was saying that the Slovenian devotees, if they were like prasadam, I could eat them. That's what he was saying yesterday, and I could relate to them. It's very sweet and relishable, you know. So I'm going to stop here because I finished what I needed to speak about. I didn't really speak much about the purport because I really had no idea what the translation of the purport was. But if anyone has any comments or questions, then now is the time that we can discuss or query. Yes, Mataji.
As I remember, you spoke in the second Buddha about hearing.
Yeah.
And I was wondering for some time that how can we properly hear, because sometimes I obviously it's easier to see than others, but probably I also have the same problem that we hear through our senses and our conditioned mind, and how can we purify it or hear what is exactly can be heard.
Yeah, so you know, hearing is not, sometimes when we say hearing, we literally take it as just hearing through our ears. That's one way, but also reading is another form of hearing. And that's more absorbing, because when you're actually reading, you're actually using your intelligence and you're trying to analyze it. And so one technique that one devotee recommended I'm using when it comes to reading is a four-step process when we read Bhagavatam or spiritual knowledge. And this is called Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasan, and Vandanam. So Shravanam means hearing. So when you read something, you try to grasp what you're reading. Mananam means contemplation. So say we have this model, I read this, I contemplated on it. Okay, so how can I relate this in my life? You know? So then I came up with this model. And then Nididhyasan means how can I practically apply this in my life? So when you read something or hear something, then you reflect that, okay, how can I implement this in my life, right? And then once you've done that, Vandana means prayer. So then you pray to Krishna that, Krishna, look, this is what I want to implement in my life. You know, Krishna, I want to hear with rapt attention. Please give me the ability where I can hear more with rapt attention and connect with you. You know, so, but you need patience and you need determination, enthusiasm. You know, it doesn't come very easily, that hearing with rapt attention. You have to be regulated in your hearing. So you just, it's like, it's a need. I have to hear. If I don't hear today, then I don't feel so right. But that takes time to develop and get into that habit. You know, so that's what constantly just hearing. You know, if you're cooking, you're driving. One devotee, Devananda Prabhu, was telling me yesterday that he used to drive trucks back in the days, and he goes, he used to drive from Italy to London, and he goes, it was great because I was hearing all the time. You know, so every opportunity in your life during the day, just look for opportunities where you can just hear. You know, and then you just get into that habit.
Well, maybe what I meant was a bit different because, for example, sometimes I hear that I have some problem with something which someone does, and I try to use what I hear to rationalize that situation. Yes, and actually it's not for that. But somehow I have a tendency to do that, and I mean something like this when we use something which we hear for wrong purpose.
So then in that situation, you need guidance from mentors or the spiritual master. Because sometimes it can happen, we can hear something, because our consciousness is contaminated, we can manipulate the Christian consciousness philosophy to get what we want, or, you know. So that's why it's very important that whatever we hear, we have some doubts, it's important to get it clarified through senior devotees or the spiritual master, and then they can give you the right guidance. Yeah. It's association. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It kind of does in my head. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, so I think that was a sign for breakfast, right? Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.